While the first millennium of the Third Age saw the rise and expansion of both Arnor and Gondor, the second millennium sees the two realms in exile on different trajectories. And it's not long before ancient foes return in the east, and the Dúnedain find their kingdoms in peril once again. Why did the Shadow return? Who was the Witch King of Angmar? And where did the hobbits come from? Find out as we continue our exploration of Middle-earth's Third Age. The Tolkien Road, Episode 205, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 3. Hello everyone, welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 205, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 3. Greta?
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty darn well.
Super duper.
I'm excited for another episode of The Tolkien Road.
Me too.
And to learn more about the Third Age of the history of Middle-earth, or the history of the Third Age of Middle-earth.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
I am as well.
Yeah, this is some interesting stuff happens in this millennium, for sure. So.
About time.
I thought it was all interesting before, too. I'm just saying.
JK.
You know. Yeah, JK.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, can't take you anywhere.
Nope. And I'm okay with that.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Good.
Moving on.
All right. Then we shall never go anywhere again.
Tomb-bound forever.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for all of you. Thanks for everyone who is listening. And we want to give a shout-out to our patrons, as always. We love being patronized.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the only people in the world probably who enjoy being patronized. We actually walk up to people and say, please patronize me.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We do. We do. Yeah. It definitely sets us apart,
I think. Someone says to me, don't patronize me, John, I'm like, why wouldn't you want me to patronize you? It means you get money.
Right.
Through Patreon.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
I don't understand these people. But what's new?
What's new?
Special shout out to our newest patron, Tom M. Thanks, Tom.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
Thanks for becoming a patron. You rock officially now as a patron.
Right. I'm sure he rocked before.
It is heretofore written in stone. Sorry.
Oh gosh. Wow. Okay.
All right. Please do support us on Patreon Tom.
Can I just say something real quick?
Sure.
So that was a very odd... I think it maybe you just had to be here, but that was a very odd comment. I mean, accent notwithstanding. But when you were talking about writing something in stone, the action you were making with your hand was that of knighting someone. So I was very confused if you were knighting Tom or if you were writing in stone.
I think I was actually like doing this, like, you know, the kind of like... you know, hear ye, let it be so kind of thing.
Oh.
So,
okay.
I need to
learn my hand gestures.
You need to learn your hand gestures.
Well, maybe you just need to make your hand gestures more clear.
Well.
You need to work on clarifying your hand gestures.
You just don't even know, Greta.
I do actually know.
Well.
Anyway.
You just don't even know so much that you think you know. All right. Hey, support us on Patreon. Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out the details. We are now on a monthly subscription basis. We're back to a monthly subscription basis. And so the way it works is you give one of the prescribed dollar amounts and you get cool stuff. So,
yeah,
like early access to our episodes, amongst other things. I'm actually kind of working on revamping all of the details. I think I've mentioned that a few weeks ago. It's slower going, as it always is with me, but I think it's going to be ready to go here soon. So excited about that and about the future of our Patreon.
Me too.
So yeah. Patronize us.
Exciting stuff. Yes.
Tip jar. Thanks to all recent donors for their generosity. Appreciate it.
We do love tips.
We love the tips. That's another way you can support the show financially. If you don't want to become a patron, if you're just like, I just kind of like to give one time, then tip jar is the way to do it. So you can just go to the current episode webpage on our website, tolkienroad.com, and look for the blue button that says leave a tip, and it's pretty straightforward from there. So that's how you do it.
Right on.
So
cool.
Rate and review us on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. You could say nice things like the person did on August 20th, which is cool because that's my birthday. And so they said, excellent, thoughtful, and entertaining, 5 stars. They said, I appreciate this podcast very much. Very thoughtful commentary on the works of Tolkien and a pleasure to listen to. Just like Tolkien's works, not only a pleasant diversion from the doldrums of the Fourth Age, but thoughts and ideas that will encourage and enrich our lives. I highly recommend it.
Ooh, that's awesome. That's definitely what we set out to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Your comment was a pleasure to read.
Indeed, it was.
Yes.
And to hear.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, please do leave us. And so I want to say this. It's important that if you're going to leave us those 5 stars, like, that's cool. But go ahead and say just a... Tell the world why you love the Tolkien Road, right? If you're going to leave us those 5 stars, take just a moment to type in some comments and say why you love the Tolkien Road, because that we love reading those things, right? We love hearing those and reading those on the show and all that good stuff. But it also tells the podcasting algorithms and all that kind of thing that you know, our show should you know, be promoted and found a little easier. So
yeah.
So.
Cool.
You really help us out when you do that, when you take the time just to write, just to tell the world.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be long.
No, it doesn't.
Or even in complete sentences.
Right.
Yeah.
It could be a haiku.
It could be a haiku.
So I think, mm-hmm. I think maybe we've had some people do that before. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could just say, love this show or love this freaking show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the freaking would be awesome.
The freaking.
If you throw
would
the freaking
awesome.
In there, like, love this freaking show, I'm like,
those are our people.
That. They mean it.
They do.
Like, they really mean it.
And that's who we want listening.
Yes.
Yeah, those kind of people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Because we mean it.
We do.
In case you hadn't noticed, we mean it.
We do mean it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like we, you know, we enjoy doing this, but we gotta find time
for it. Well, no, we do enjoy doing this.
That's what I said.
Well, you said it's not like we enjoy doing this.
Oh, I meant that we don't enjoy doing this. We obviously enjoy doing this, or we wouldn't be doing it, but... You know, it's something that we have to continually work to find the time for.
Mm-hmm.
And when we hear from you guys how much you enjoy it, it makes it, you know, makes us want to find the time and even find more time when we can.
Preach.
Yes.
Finally, please subscribe to the feed as well. That always helps. So,
yeah.
Tolkien news, nothing really new in the world of Tolkiendom right now, but send us tips if you find little things that you find interesting that we haven't mentioned yet. Send us tips and it might get read on the air. Correspondents, stick around for the end of the episode. Sorry about last week. We'd planned to do some and I was a fumbling mess and trying to respond, and so I took some time to actually write out and research my responses before I wrote them. So stick around to the end of the episode for some good discussion on some recent correspondence. On this episode, we're continuing our deep dive into the history of the Third Age, and this time we will be looking at the major events of the second millennium of the Third Age. Okay, Greta, you ready to dive into the second millennium of the Third Age?
I got my scuba gear on. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Greta, so the second millennium of the Third Age. So... The first millennium, roundabout, really 861, close enough to the end of the first millennium, ended with the division of Arnor, right? So division of Arnor into 3 kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
But the second millennium is really a period where Gondor seems to be on the up and up, right? Like, we talked about the ship kings of Gondor towards the end of the last episode. And... You know, how they were starting to conquer all these regions to the south. And, you know, man, the empire of Gondor was, like, vast.
Exploded.
Right? So
yeah.
While Arnor is splitting up and, like, you know, fighting amongst themselves, apparently, Gondor seems to be just expanding even more vastly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what we also have in the second millennium of Middle-earth is the rebirth of the Shadow, right? The return of the Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see some of that as well. All right. So, 933, King Yarnil the First takes Umbar, which becomes a fortress of Gondor. So this is another one of those ship kings, right? In fact, if you'll remember, he is the nephew of Falastor, right?
Okay.
King Falastor, right?
Right?
Who didn't have an heir because he sent his wife out to sea before they could have a kid, I guess.
Yep.
So, so King Yarnil the First takes Umbar. Now, Umbar is this port, coastal city down in Harad, right? The Sutherland, right? Way down here. So Gondor's up here, and, you know, you have to go all the way down here to find Umbar. So,
does that mean he conquered it? Is that what it means when he says he takes it?
That's what I'd say, yeah.
Okay.
Takes Umbar, conquers Umbar, right?
Okay.
I think they were pretty much conquering at this point, right?
Yeah.
Gone is the genteel ways of the of certain strands of Numenorean culture, it would seem, and now they're very much, they've kind of gone back to the ways that eventually led to Ar-Pharazôn, it would seem.
Gotcha,
right?
Yeah.
All about domination and conquering,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we got, yeah, King Yarnil the First takes Umbar, which becomes a fortress of Gondor. I mean, he says he fortifies it, so that's, you know, even more so. But then 3 years later, Yarnil is lost at sea. All right, so let's see if Yarnil's any more interesting things to learn about King Yarnil there.
Nope.
You said no.
Nothing to, I mean, I think we hit the high notes, right? Nephew of Thalastor.
Yeah, he was tragically lost at sea in 936 near Umbar and was succeeded by his son, Kiriandil. So, nope. Pretty much just a jerk, conquered a bunch of people, and then was lost at sea.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could say he got what was coming to him.
You know,
am I right?
I wonder if he saw Beruthiel when he was lost at sea. Or she's like still out there.
Still out there. Still out floating there raft, around. Like,
hey, have you seen my husband? He left me out here. All right. Poor Beruthiel. All right. So, Yarnil lost at sea, 936. Then 1015, King Kiarandil slain in the siege of Umbar. All right, so...
That was his son.
That was his son. And then 1050, Hjarmundasil conquers the Harad, right? So, Hjarmundasil seems to be the one that completes what... Thalastor had begun with the ship Kings of Arnor,
is
right?
Is that Kirindil's son?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
Okay.
Let's double check that. Because we can.
But wait, what
yes,
is...
Yes, he is.
What is the Harad?
The Harad, remember, that's this region to the south. So that's the people of this...
Oh, where Umbar is.
I think that's just like the south, the southerners, right? Like the Southrons,
gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
The people down to the south.
So he conquers them. Okay.
Yeah, so... But here's what's really interesting. This year 1050, I think, is maybe the most significant year in the first two millennia of the Third Age. Hjarmundasil conquers the Harad. So Gondor is expanding. It reaches the height of its power, it says. About this time, a shadow falls on Greenwood, and men begin to call it Mirkwood. Dun, dun, dun.
That can't be good.
And the Perianoth are first mentioned in records with the coming of the Harfoots to Eriador. And we also know that the Istari had shown up about this time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So remember when we did our first episode on the Third Age timeline, we talked about that thing I noticed where the Hobbits, the Perianoth, who are the predecessors of the Hobbits, and the Istari seemed to kind of like rise up in Middle-earth mysteriously
mm-hmm.
in about the same time,
right?
Well, it also happens to be the same time that Gondor reaches the height of its power and this very imperial conquering power, right?
Right.
And also that the shadow returns in Mirkwood, right? In Greenwood, and it becomes Mirkwood, right?
It's interesting that all happens around the same time.
Well, I feel like it might be somewhat related to Gondor, you know, because Sauron is all about power, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
he's all about... He feeds off of domination and power,
mm-hmm.
and so I feel like... It's almost like Gondor was becoming what he hoped it would. If he wasn't going to survive, Gondor was becoming what he hoped it would, which is to mean a mockery of what Numenor was intended to be in the first place, right? It's becoming this place that benefits from having, you know, longer life of its people, that benefits from having maybe more knowledge of the things of, like, the West and of Valinor, but it's using them for ill purposes.
Yeah.
Right? To conquer, to dominate.
And so that attracted Sauron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It almost seems like it might have,
mm-hmm.
right?
Kind of brought him out of his slumber.
Did it kind of set the
he
stage?
He sensed the, maybe he sensed some kindred spirits.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about the connection of what Gondor was doing being something that like kind of like results in it, like almost like conjures Sauron's spirit, right?
Mm-hmm.
In another part of Middle Earth. Yeah. Although I believe if we look at that map, where was that map? Oh yeah, here we go. So by this time, yeah, so Gondor's empire in this year, 1050, extended to the southern border of Greenwood, right? So it's interesting to think that like they were that they were right on the edge of Greenwood, and that's where he returned, right up here in the north. So up there near Dol Guldur.
Well, it's also interesting that this also coincides with the coming of the Istari and then the predecessors to the Hobbits. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I know we talked about that in the previous episode, but we didn't connect that with the falling of the shadow. So it's interesting that it all kind of, you know, that they're all coinciding.
You said the falling of the shadow? You mean the rebirth of the shadow?
The rebirth of the shadow.
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said the falling of the shadow.
Well, the shadow is falling on Greenwood.
The refalling of the shadow.
The refalling of the shadow.
Yeah. The refalling of the shadow upon other things.
Right.
Overshadowing other things. Yes.
The refalling.
I feel you.
Yes. The second falling.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
As if the first falling wasn't a once.
Wasn't it? No.
Gotta fall again. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's the third falling that'll be the charm.
Mm.
Maybe.
So bet third falling doesn't happen.
Yeah, right.
All right, 1100. The wise, aka the Istari and the chief Eldar, discovered that an evil power has made a stronghold at Dol Guldur. It is thought to be one of the Nazgul. All right, let's just pause here for a second. Like, so the Istari return, you know, show up around the year 1000. I just want to think about, like, do a little detour and think about, like, the Istari showing up in Middle Earth, right? You know, here's, like, Elrond and Galadriel and Círdan, and all of a sudden, like, these five guys show up from Valinor, right?
You're like, this can't be good.
Well, or you know, they don't know what to think, but it's like they knock on the door. It's like knock on Círdan's door, and it's like, yeah, we're here from the Blessed Realm.
Yeah.
It's been a while since you spoke with the Blessed Realm, and we're just kind of coming to check in on things.
Right. Yeah. But you can't think it's good.
Right.
Right? Like, you just can't. Because, like, why would these five supernatural beings just, like, show up?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know, but if I all of a sudden saw, like, you know, like, several saints walking around downtown Franklin, I'd be like, uh-oh. We're in for it.
Yeah, but you have to remember, too, that that Galadriel and Círdan, I believe, I know at least Galadriel would have, like, she lived in Valinor at one point. Right, a long time before.
Right.
So she would have known them, right?
Right. So they would have been friends. So they right. Okay. So they it could have just been a friendly visit. Let's catch up. It's been a while.
Yeah. And then,
but still, all five of them. You know, I could see one or two coming, but all five. That's a bit harrowing.
And Círdan would have known him too, because he was born in the. I think he was Círdan. Was kin of both, where is it?
Come on, spit it out.
Well, it does say he was alive during the Year of the Trees, but he may not have been. Anyway,
All I'm saying is that all five showing up at the same time somewhere where they've never been before, you know, like it's like the it would just be like what were those characters, remember, we used to watch that show Fringe. Mm-hmm. Remember those characters, those alien like characters? Were they skinwalkers? Is that what we called them?
No. You're talking about the pale guys with no hair.
Yeah. What were they
called?
That
wore the black suits.
Yes,
they were just like men in black,
but yeah, I thought they had a different name. Anyway, but it's like them just showing up, right?
Yeah, like, but I think the wizards probably looked a little less creepy. Okay.
I'm not going on their looks. Yeah. I'm just going on the fact.
Are you calling me shallow?
I am. Yeah, shoe fits. I'm just saying, just the fact that they showed up.
Yeah.
Is would be a little unsettling. That's okay. All I'm saying. But anyway, I've probably belabored that point.
Yeah, well, I was also thinking it was funny to think about, like, they show up and then, like, Saruman and Gandalf are like, all right, we got some work to do. We gotta figure out how to stop this Sauron, you know, old Sauron. And then the blue wizards and the other guy. I can't believe I can't think of his name.
Radagast,
thank you. Mm-hmm. Radagastkar. The blue wizards and Radagast are kind of like, all right, see you later. We're going to go do our own thing. You know, yeah. It's just like they go off and they're just like, I mean, I guess Radagast hangs out kind of close, but they're just kind of like, man, that was a long trip. You know what? I'm not so sure I'm into this whole like taking on Sauron thing. I think I'm just going to go explore some in the East.
Yeah. I want a vacation. See you.
Gandalf, Saruman, you guys can take care of this. Yeah. You guys are a lot better wizards than we are anyway. So
yeah. So we're just going to see you later.
That's right.
That is kind of funny. So where is Dol Guldur?
Mm-hmm.
Can you show that to me on the map? I'm trying to get my bearings.
Yeah, it's in the south of Mirkwood.
So it's not in Greenwood.
So Greenwood. Yeah, it is. Mirkwood was called Greenwood before it became Mirkwood.
Gotcha. Okay. So this is all the same area that the shadow is falling on.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And it's interesting that they initially thought it was in Nazgul. Right?
Oh, yes, right.
Like, I mean, would the because the Nazgul are under the command of Sauron, right?
Yeah.
So how could so they're thinking that maybe the Nazgul have overtaken Dol Guldur.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they thought that. Maybe they thought that Sauron was gone for good.
And these were just his minions.
Yeah.
To kind of make a presence known. Okay.
So.
Interesting.
I'm not entirely sure why that is. Yeah. That's a good question.
Thanks. Full of them today.
Yeah, you're mm-hmm. doing good.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the affirmation.
All right. 1149. Atanatar Alcarin. So Atanatar Alcarin, his reign begins. And Atanatar Alcarin really symbolizes the decadence of Gondor, right? It seems like their decline is really going to start beginning here soon. So his name means glorious. That Alcarin means glorious. He succeeded his father Hjarmen Dassil when Gondor had reached its greatest power and largest extent. Atanatar lived in ease and splendor, such that people said precious stones or pebbles in Gondor for children to play with. The king loved luxury, and it was during his reign that the original crown of Gondor was replaced by a jeweled helm. However, due to the king's indolence, nothing was done to maintain the power that his ancestors had built, and the watch upon Mordor was neglected. So just as soon as they reach their apex, the decline begins, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Atanatar Alcarin represents. All right. Around 1150, we have record that the Fallowhides entered Eriador. The Stores come over the Redhorn Pass and move to the Angle or to Dunland. So again, these are groups of the Perianoth, right? These are groups of Hobbit predecessors.
What the Fallowhides are?
And the Stores. There's Fallowhides, Stores, and Harfoots.
And those are all part of the Perianthith?
Perianoth.
Perianoth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Fallowhides are actually predecessors of Took, Sprandybucks, and Bulgers, right?
Oh.
And then the Stores are predecessors of, like, Gollum's people. So.
Oh, you not Gollum. You mean
Smeagol. Smeagol's people. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the significance of that.
Mm-hmm.
Around 1300, evil things begin to multiply again. Orcs increase in the Misty Mountains and attack the dwarves. The Nazgul reappear. The chief of these comes north to Angmar. The Perianoth migrate westward. Many settle at Bree.
Hmm.
Right, so they're coming closer to the Shire at that point.
So this is 1300.
Yeah.
So we're still a good, like, 1600 years out from The Hobbit?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, most definitely.
Hmm.
Now, the Nazgul reappear, the chief of these comes north to Angmar, and I'm pretty sure he's eventually known as the Witch King of Angmar, who we'll see here in just a moment. So, it all began in Dol Guldur in around 1100, and then 200 years later, you know, evil things are noticeable enough for people to say, like, oh, they're multiplying, right?
Right, yeah.
The orcs are increasing in the Misty Mountains, and apparently... where did I read this? I can't remember where I read this, but apparently the orcs are starting to really taking the Misty Mountains because they want to make it impossible for there to be like transit over the Misty Mountains, right? Like they want to make it hard for the different kingdoms, like the different free kingdoms, to be connected to one another, right? They want to make travel around Middle Earth very difficult. So that's why that is. 1356, King Argaleb the First slain in battle with Rudaur. About this time, the Stores leave the Angle and some return to Wilderland. So, let's talk about Argaleb the First here. Argaleb the First is the seventh king of Arthedain, succeeding his father Malvagil upon his death in 1349. And then Rudaur.
This is a part of Arnor, yes?
Yes. So remember, okay. Arthedain was the kingdom that was kind of like the main portion of Arnor, right? Mm. It was, and then you had Cardolan and Rudaur, which were the, Cardolan was the south portion, Rudaur was the eastern portion.
Okay.
So by this time, what this means is that the kingdoms were fighting amongst themselves at this point, right?
Okay.
So King Argaleb is the king of Arthedain, and Rudaur is the eastern kingdom, eastern portion of Arnor. So they're fighting with each other. Argaleb the slain in battle with Rudaur. About this time, the Stores leave the Angle and some return to Wilderland. So we have that. And then 1409, the Witch King of Angmar invades Arnor. King Arvaleg the First slain. Fornost and Tirn Gorthod are defended. The Tower of Amansul destroyed. And Amansul is Weathertop, right? Amansul is the, is that place in Lord of the Rings where Frodo is stabbed, right? On the East Road. So, but this is when it was actually a, you know, a great like watchtower fortress kind of thing. So
the Stores originally lived in Arnor, or in that part of Arnor, the central part.
Let's see.
It says they leave the
Angle. Let me see what the Angle is.
Yeah.
The Angle, Eriador. The Angle is originally part of the realm of Arnor. In Third Age 861, in the division of Arnor, the Angle became part of the kingdom of Rudaur. So
yeah, they did. Interesting.
Yeah. So, oh, I think it's this right here. Yeah, the Angle right there. I can see why it's called
because
that.
Because it looks like an angle. Yeah.
So upside down triangle. The Angle is the area between, is where, it's the land south of the Troll Shaws, between the river, the Horwell and the Loudwater rivers. Right. So, and it looks like a triangle, and that's, which is probably why it's called the Angle. So that's where the Stores were settled during this time.
But then they left after that battle.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Arnor is becoming an increasingly unfriendly place. Mm-hmm. It also makes me think, you know, in 1409, we got the Witch King of Angmar, invading Arnor. And it makes me think that, the whole thing in 1356 with Rudaur was kind of the work of the Witch King, right? That he was up to, you know, maybe up to no good there. So, because it says in circa 1300 that the chief of these, the Witch King, comes north to Angmar. So maybe he was working in Rudaur all that time and, you know, trying to get them to, look with envy upon the Arthedain, the people
maybe
of Arthedain.
Stirring things up,
stirring the pot. Okay. Right. So.
All right.
Okay. Where were we? All right, so 1432. King Valakar of Gondor dies, and the civil war of the Kinstrife begins. Yeah, that Kinstrife, that's one I want to look into, do kind of a deep dive eventually on. But with Gondor, so we had, you know, things are bad in Arnor. We got some Kinstrife in Arnor. Now we got some Kinstrife in Gondor.
Mm-hmm.
So, but just a quick note.
And how much of this do you think is due to the Shadow? I think a lot of it.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, it's interesting to think about like the interplay of like Gondor's own, like Gondor and Arnor's own greed, getting away from what they were like, kind of the heart of what Numenor was supposed to be, and being more concerned about dominating and being rich and all these sorts of things, leading to the resurgence of the Shadow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Just says the Kinstrife was a disastrous civil war in Gondor that lasted for 15 years. The unrest that created the Kinstrife began when Valakar, the son of the Gondorian king Roman Dasil II, married a woman of the Northmen of Rovanion, of Vidumavi. She bore him a son, Eldakar, but many Gondorians of Numenorean blood were angered by the mixing of his blood of middlemen and Numenoreans, and the coastal provinces rebelled when Valakar grew old. Ooh, sounds ugly. All right. So that's one I definitely want to maybe do a deep dive on later on.
Yeah, so that would be interesting.
But that lasted for 15 years, from 1432 to 1437.
1447.
1447. During that time, 1437, Asgiliath is burned and the Palantir are lost. And then Eldakar flees to Ravania and his son Ornendil is murdered. So I think that's the son that they were talking about right there. Yeah, Ornendil is murdered during that time. And then Eldakar returns in 1447 and drives out the usurper Castamir. Battle of the Crossings of Arawi. Siege of Pelargir.
Is this all happening in Gondor?
All happening in Gondor.
Okay.
1448, rebels escape and seize Umbar. 1540, King Aldemir slain in war with the Harad and Corsairs of Umbar. 1551, Hjarmandil Sil II defeats the men of Harad. And so, you know, really, 1432 to 1551 is a pretty tumultuous period in Gondor, it sounds like.
Yeah, lots of fighting.
So 1601, many Perianath migrate from Bree and are granted land beyond Barad-dûr by Argileb II.
So is that beyond Barad-dûr?
Yeah,
are they getting closer to Middle-earth now?
To
the Shire?
To the Shire.
That's what I meant.
Getting closer to where they are.
Yeah. You know what I meant.
I know what you mean.
Yes.
So yes, Bree is right here. So basically, the Brandywine is right here, the Barad-dûr, the Brandywine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the land they're granted. Okay. So the king,
which would become the Shire.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Argileb II is the king of Arthedain.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and then 1630, they're joined by Storrs coming up from Dunland. So we have both.
Oh, so now we have the, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, all right.
More hobbit types.
More hobbits.
Arriving in the Shire.
1634, the Corsairs ravage Pelargir and slay King Minardil. 1630, again, Gondor problem. 1636, the Great Plague devastates Gondor. Death of King Telemnar and his children. The White Tree dies in Minas Anor. The plague spreads north and west, and many parts of Eriador become desolate. Beyond the Barad-dûr, the Perianath survive but suffer great loss. So, you know, by the time we get to Lord of the Rings, this region of Eriador, which is a pretty vast region, you know, we get the sense that it's not very populous. And that seems
now
to
we
stem
know why.
That may stem from this period of 1636 of the Great Plague.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the White Tree, we said we'll eventually do a deep dive on all of the White Trees. And that White Tree.
Does the White Tree die of the plague as well?
I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Some plague.
Indeed.
I don't see a lot of trees dying from coronavirus.
I don't either.
Just saying.
Just saying.
Yeah, coronavirus not so tough.
No. Mm-mm. Well, let's not talk smack against coronavirus.
Well, maybe
please.
Maybe we should.
Let's knock on some wood.
I take it back.
I'm not trying.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody, if I just screwed us all. The human race.
Yeah. Maybe we should just go back and edit that part out.
Human race is now doomed. My bad. It's too late. I've already said it. Yeah. Coronavirus is everywhere. It hears everything we say.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
Actually.
All right. 1640, King Tarandor removes the king's house to Minas Anor and plants a seedling of the White Tree. As Gileath begins to fall into ruin, Mordor is left unguarded. Yeah, just not fun times.
Yeah, it's like going from bad to worse.
Yeah, yeah. But we do get a new White Tree. We get a new White Tree planted in Minas Anor, but As Gileath is just, not a great place to live anymore. 1810, jumping forward 170 years, King Telumetur Umbardasil retakes Umbar and drives out the Corsairs. So, you know, positive for Gondor there. Win for Gondor.
There's a lot of give and take here.
Definitely.
Back and forth.
Definitely.
You win, I win. You lose, we lose. Yeah.
1851, the attacks of the Wainriders upon Gondor begins. Speaking for myself, I've always wanted to ride a Wain.
Who hasn't?
Yes.
I mean, it sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think? Maybe we could use a boogie board.
To ride a Wayne?
To ride a Wayne, you think?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So now that that's settled, who are the Wayne riders? When you deal with so many unknowns like we are right now, it's just kind of, you know, but I've always loved the name of the Wayne riders. Like, you know,
Wayne riders.
Like, I'm just picturing, like, you know, Wayne from Wayne's World and like riding on Wayne.
Riding,
you
know, on Wayne. Like on his back.
Like, yeah, while he's like flying through the air or something, you know?
So, like Super Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But seriously, the Wayne riders were a people or confederacy of men from the east. They journeyed in great wagons, and their chieftains rode chariots in battle. They camped in fortified camps of wagons. Their young women were also trained in arms, and they, along with old men and youth, stayed behind, able to defend their homes from attackers. So they sound like pretty tough folks.
So would these be like descendants of the Easterlings, or would they kind of be in that general group of Easterlings, like Wayne riders are types of Easterlings?
Yeah, it would seem so.
Okay.
But this period of 1851 to 18...
They're kind of like the Huns.
Maybe.
There's...
Or again, like the Mongols coming, because the Mongols came from the east.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, like, you know, throughout history, there have been like different kind of like groups of people
that
around and they invade from elsewhere.
Right.
And they're like really good, warriors.
Mm-hmm.
So... 1856. So 1851 to 1899 is actually a period, like a long period of war with the Wayne riders, between Gondor and the Wayne riders. It's actually called, this Wayne rider Balcoth war. It goes on for like 600 years, according to Tolkien Gateway. Gondor in 1856 loses eastern territories, and Narmasil II falls in battle. And then, in 1899, King Calamatar defeats the Wayne riders on Dagorlad, and so that's a hopeful development there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see here. 1900, Calamatar builds the White Tower in Minas Anor. 1940, Gondor and Arnor renew communication and form an alliance. 1944. Orador Andohor falls in battle. Yarnil defeats the enemy in South Athelion. He then wins the Battle of the Camp and drives Wayne riders into the Dead Marshes. Arvedui claims the crown of Gondor. And then 1945, Yarnil II receives the crown. 1974, end of the North Kingdom. The Witch King overruns Arthedain and takes Fornost.
Well, that's only a few years after they formed their alliance.
That is, yeah. Hmm. So Gondor, I think, maybe triumphed over the Wayne riders and then tried to come to the help of Arnor, but it was maybe too little too late.
Hmm.
Arvedui drowned in the Bay of Forokel in 1975. The Palantiri of Anúminas and Amansul are lost. Yarnor brings a fleet to Lindon, the Witch King defeated at the Battle of Fornost and pursued to the Ettenmoors. He vanishes from the north. And then Arnarth takes the title of Chieftain of the Dúnedain. The heirlooms of Arnor are given into the keeping of Elrond. So that's kind of where we'll draw the line on the completion of the second millennium. It's not technically the completion, but I think
that's a good
stopping point.
Arnor gone at this point?
For this period. Huh?
Arnor is no more.
Arnor, this is pretty much the end of Arnor.
Yeah.
Like, after this, Arnor becomes kind of not very populated, not very civilized anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah. But the good thing is that the Witch King of Angmar is now gone. So,
right, yeah, they got rid of him.
So there's really not anybody to, harass. It would seem there's not really anybody to harass the hobbits, although we'll see what happens in the third millennium.
So there wasn't really any one huge event that caused the destruction of Arnor. It was just seemed like it was just lots of little things, right?
It was weakened from within,
right?
You know, and
yeah.
by the division,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the last period,
right?
At 876, and so was it 876 or?
When they divided
861.
It. Yeah, when it got divided. Yeah, so it only lasted, not even 1,000 years after that?
Right.
Did it? Or was it a little more? Anyway.
Yeah, a little more than 1,000 years.
Yeah.
But it was a divided kingdom. And then they started fighting amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just made them weak enough for the Witch King of Angmar
to do battle
with them.
Yeah.
So.
Wah, wah.
Of course, the Great Plague didn't help. Probably didn't help that, the Great Plague took out so many people in Gondor, and it was right, less so connected. Partly Arnor did it to itself, partly there were forces from without that really hurt it. So
mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So
R.I.P. Arnor.
2 millennia into the Third Age, 1 millennia to go. But it's a very, very busy millennium, that third millennium of the Third Age.
Third millennium usually are.
So we might end up having to do a couple episodes on that one. I don't know.
All right. Bring it on.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Time for some correspondence. Ready for some correspondence there, Greta?
I'm always ready for correspondence. One of my most favorite things.
Right on. Okay. So first thing I wanted to note was just give a shout out to our old pal, Tea with Tolkien, Caitlin Fascista.
Caitlin!
What's up, Caitlin? She Woo-hoo. Recently tweeted out the best Tolkien podcasts, and we were listed right there first.
Look at us, number one.
Yeah, so
that's fantastic.
I mean, she didn't put number one Tolkien Road, but let's just say
it's not alphabetical order either. Well, so T rarely comes first in alphabeticalness, anyway.
Just saying.
Just saying, peeps.
Anyway, Caitlin, thank you. Thank you for giving us that shout out.
You know what? I'm still honored to be like part of her three.
That's right.
I mean, absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. No matter where we are in that three.
Here's the other awesome thing. Caitlin has her own Tolkien podcast.
That's right.
So, you know, she mentioned three other Tolkien podcasts. And so that, and I think Caitlin is like a mega Tolkien fan, right? Like she is the go-to for Tolkien fans on Twitter. One of the main go-tos, I would say. And so she takes this kind of thing seriously. Like if somebody mm-hmm. asks like, hey, a good Tolkien podcast, she's going to be like, she takes that responsibility seriously.
She's thoughtful about her response. Yeah. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And she's awesome. I love her podcast too.
Yeah.
Awesome. I really enjoy her. Yeah.
Maybe we should have her on again. It's been a while.
We need to. So, it's been too long.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, anyway, Caitlin, maybe you'll hear from us soon. Hopefully you will if I can get my act together. And thanks for the shout out. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much.
The next thing I wanted to mention is from Tom. So this is also from Twitter. So let's see. What do I do first? I'm going to go back. So last time, this is one of the things I fumbled over last time. But Tom tweeted on August 10th. He said, hi there, love the podcast. My recollection is that Celebrimbor made the Elven Rings without Sauron's help. They were not forged in response to the One Ring, though. The One was forged last, intended to control and bid the welding of the others. So, Tom is correct. So, the reason I fumbled over this last time is because I didn't take a moment to like actually look this up, and just tried to like kind of be like, well, I know that, but I think we misspoke on a previous episode and said that they made the three rings in response to Sauron. And so Tom is correct. And I go into Tolkien Gateway here. Here's what it says. Under the guidance and instruction of Annatar, who was another name for Sauron, Celebrimbor and the Gwaith-i Myrdain made several lesser rings of power. A legend says that Celebrimbor gave one of those rings to King Durin III, who reigned in Khazad-dûm. Using the knowledge gained from Annatar, Celebrimbor also created three rings by himself, the greatest and fairest of the rings of power. These rings were thus free of Sauron's corrupting influence, for only Celebrimbor himself touched them. Celebrimbor named the rings Vilya, Narya, and Ninya, after the principal elements of air, fire, and water, respectively. Vilya and Narya were sent by Celebrimbor to Gil-galad and Círdan, respectively in Lindon, and Ninya to Galadriel in Lothlorien. Around Second Age 1600, Sauron secretly forged the One Ring in Orodruin, which would enable him to rule Middle-earth by claiming dominance over all the Rings of Power and their bearers. However, when Sauron put on the One Ring with the intention of dominating the wills of those wearing the Lesser Rings, the elves who bore the three instantly became aware of Sauron's deceit and his plan. He then prepared for war. So, there you go. So that's the correction. So I think we misspoke on a previous episode when we said that they made the rings in response to Sauron creating the One Ring. The three rings were made by Celebrimbor before the One Ring was created, and it was not in response to Sauron creating the One Ring. So the One Ring did come afterwards, after the three rings were created.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we appreciate that correction.
Yes,
there, Tom.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Tom also recently wrote another tweet. This was on August 15th. And I wanted to share this because this is a song. So he said, I was thinking about a songwriting challenge that requires a song under a minute. I came up with this. Obviously, your recent interview was in my mind. And I think he's referring to my interview with Connor Sweeney on The Long Defeat.
Okay.
I'm going to read this because I thought it was really cool. I've reached my closing moment. I look up to the sky, the sunlight through the emerald leaves, a pleasant day to die. Regrets and small accomplishments pass briefly through my mind. The long defeat is over, and faith has turned to sight. My final breath is drawing nigh. I pass through death to live and never die. Regrets and small accomplishments pass briefly through my mind. The long defeat is over, and faith has turned to sight.
Ooh, awesome. That's lovely.
Beautiful, beautiful work there, Tom.
So it's a songwriting challenge. Is there music that accompanies that?
That is a good question. Tom, you know, I don't know.
I mean,
Tom,
it's beautiful the way it is.
Tom,
I was
if you
just
hear
wondering.
This, yeah, Tom, if you hear this, if there's music that accompanies that, it would be great to hear the music that
I'd
goes along with that.
I'd love to hear it, yeah.
So hit us up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Please.
Send us a link if you got something like that, or whatever way it works for you to contact. If you want to do Twitter again, whatever works for you. So really enjoyed that, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So let's see. Next is a letter from Marilyn, the librarian. Marilyn, you always write such amazing correspondence and in depth, and it's great stuff. And I always struggle to because I feel like I have to spend a lot of time responding to all the things
yeah.
you write.
Yeah.
So I have to be a little choosy, sometimes with what Marilyn has wrote, but this was important because this is actually in response to a question we asked her in response to one of her other letters that we had read on air. So on a previous episode, we read a piece of mail from Marilyn that was sent in response to the series on Tolkien's political views. So she originally wrote to about this on June 2nd when she said, and this is an excerpt, she said, he was very fond of hierarchies and thought they were right and proper without recognizing the violence that hierarchical thinking produces. So I think I just... If memory serves, I think I had just kind of asked her for some clarification on what she meant by being fond of hierarchies. So she responded, in another letter here recently, and she said, you asked me in the podcast to say more about why I say Tolkien likes hierarchies. First, let me offer a little bit of insight into letter 52, where he says, give me a king whose chief interest is in stamps, railways, or racehorses. Tolkien was born during the reign of Victoria, the first English monarch to ride in a train, and she became a great enthusiast of railways. Next came her son, Edward VII, who had a passion for racehorses, and then George V, who collected stamps. So in effect, he's praising all the previous monarchs he's lived under, even the one who was king during the First World War. So before we continue with Marilyn's letter, I just wanted to interject a few quick thoughts and say, first, thanks for that cool bit of insight. I didn't realize that Tolkien was alluding to the interests of past British monarchs in his letter when he made that comment about stamps, railways, and racehorses. So that was really pretty fascinating. So this is, and Greta looks a little confused, and that's because we're talking about one of the episodes that she wasn't actually on. So this
now,
is from
this
a,
is familiar
a letter.
To me, though.
Well, that's because we tried to respond to this last week, and I bumbled my response, and
oh,
so I wanted to redo it.
Gotcha.
I wanted to write out a little better what I was going to say, because I was like, blah, blah, blah.
I see.
That was basically how my response came out last
Got
time
it.
We tried to respond. So,
well, you're doing much better now.
Well, that's because I took the time to write it out, which
yes.
is really what Marilyn's correspondence deserves.
Always, yes.
So that's a really cool little tidbit.
That
like
is
I was
really,
saying.
Really interesting. Yeah.
Stamps, railways, racehorses, that corresponds to the three previous monarchs of Tolkien when Tolkien wrote this letter, right? And then I also want to say, I think if he's praising them, for being more interested in their hobbies than in domination and empire. Now, I know this is the British Empire, so they're the monarchs of the British Empire. So that was part of their interest. But I guess I don't know that they, that he's praising them for that. He's praising them because maybe they had these mundane interests, right? In fact, in the same letter, he says the monarchical system has a fatal flaw and that it can be so easily abused, and even more so in the modern context. So I think that's where I get a little tripped up. I can see how, you know, I can see how he maybe had a fondness for hierarchies, or maybe think they were kind of like, you know, had an appreciation for certain aspects of them. But I don't know if I'd go so far as to say he had like a fondness or an inordinate fondness for them. And, mm-hmm. but let me continue with Marilyn's letter. She goes on to say, I think this is more than a bit of nostalgia and a good indicator of his emotional condition. Everything was better in the past because the present is so fraught, and so he's more prone to exaggeration. I also think he was feeling enormous anxiety for his sons. Under the circumstances, it's understandable that Tolkien would be fed up with the current system and express himself in extremes. In general, I think he much prefers small communities of like-minded folks who govern themselves nicely, thanks very much. In other words, the Shire, or the countryside of his youth, and I certainly understand that. But he's also quoted 20-plus years later as saying, touching your cap to the squire may be damn good, may be damn bad for the squire, but it's damn good for you. As I continue to respond, I want to note that Marilyn wrote a good bit more, and I thank her for that, and we'll try to provide some further thoughts to her offline. And I'm going to give her the final word with the end of her letter, but I wanted to offer a couple of more thoughts in response to Marilyn here. So as a Catholic, I feel Tolkien when he says, touching your cap to the squire may be damn bad for the squire, but it's damn good for you. I feel like it's a paradox, right? That it's like a wisdom paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's saying it's not good for the monarch or the squire, or whoever, that someone has to touch their cap to them, right? So that's a limit of the system, but it may actually be a good thing for the person who has to touch their cap, right? You know, and
you mean like the humbling aspect,
exactly,
of it?
Right? Yeah. Like mm-hmm. the act of humility, if you will, mm-hmm. right? The act mm-hmm. of humility to do that,
yeah. And just recognizing that there is helps put you in your place,
and again, I'm a Catholic like Tolkien, and as a convert from Protestantism to Catholicism. This is actually something that I saw wisdom in. It, not so much the touching of your cap, but having someone, I think having to make the act of humility,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Having to humble yourself before one as a proper act,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
As flawed as that person may be, right? That's not to say I agree with people remaining in grossly abusive situations or with keeping like some kind of absolute power where a person who is an abusive tyrant in a, you know, in a position can just remain there without any objection. Right. I'm not saying that I agree with that either. I'm simply saying that I think it's something helpful to us in keeping us spiritually humble. I think that I find that I feel what Tolkien is saying here, I guess, mm-hmm. I'm going with it, right?
Yeah.
On a spiritual level.
Same.
It can also give us direction in a very positive sense and organize a community by giving someone the final say in a constitutional sense. So, you know, again, this is kind of me speaking from a Catholicism standpoint and the, you know, in the sense of having a hierarchy that leads the church that we're a part of, where you do have someone who is like makes the final decision on behalf of the community. And like in the case of the church, like the Pope is like the servant of the servants of God, right? That's, mm-hmm. that's one of his titles, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. The proper role is for the person in authority in a hierarchy to be a servant of all the others. Right. Right?
Yeah.
And that's the proper way it should be. I also think hierarchies are an inescapable thing. In addition to being a member of a church where hierarchy is a thing, I've also spent years in both military and corporate professional settings. I can see the virtue of hierarchy in making better decisions, in conflict resolution and accountability, in efficient execution, amongst many other things. While it's always prone to abuse and corruption, everything that humans involve themselves in or with tends to be. And this was a saying that I heard when I was coming into the Catholic Church that I think is very true. Abuse does not negate the proper use. You know, the fact that all throughout history, people have abused, hierarchical power over others doesn't mean that something like hierarchy, and maybe you don't want to use that name, maybe it needs to be very flat, but something like hierarchy is almost inescapable, right? Mm. if you want to have any meaningful society or culture.
Yeah. Right? You need that organization.
Yeah.
Just that framework.
Yeah. So there are a number of ways hierarchical structures can be abused. And I'm definitely not a fan of bloated hierarchy. Nor do I think Tolkien was. I really don't think he was. All throughout the history of the Second and Third Ages, we are seeing how monarchies can and do go bad in Tolkien's own fictional world, right? You know, we saw that with the Second Age, and, you know, Gondor is, like, expanding, and Gondor's own downfall is in its, like, its expansion, right? It's seeking to dominate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's sowing its the seeds of its very downfall. So there's a, like, a... I think Tolkien is trying to give us a literary lesson there, right? Or a historical lesson of some sort. But in the end, I don't really think Tolkien cared that much about touting monarchy over democracy per se. Rather, I think he was rejecting the contemporary conceit that we have it all figured out with our modern ways. That is, like, to me, that is a huge theme of Tolkien's, that he wants to poke modernity in the eye, mm-hmm. and be like, mm-hmm. you think you're so wise, right? And you look back at the past and you say, look at those nincompoops with their hierarchies and, you know, all the other stuff. But really, are you that much wiser? Right?
Yeah.
Are you that much wiser for real? I think, to me, that's what Tolkien is more about. I don't think, you know, I think if we had him here and could get into a deeper discussion on, like, you know, hierarchies and that kind of thing, I think we'd probably find he has very nuanced views.
Hmm.
You know, on whether he thinks that's a good thing, even on monarchy.
Yeah, I was gonna say nothing's black and white. Yeah. You know, there's always that gray.
Right.
You know,
and I think he's pretty consistent in acknowledging that power can be abused, right?
Yeah, very easily. Absolutely.
Right? I think it's in his works. I think it's in the stories
of Middle
Earth.
Just look at the ring, right? I mean,
I think it's in the stories of Middle Earth. I think it's in, and I think it's I read that in his own in the political letters that we. The quote-unquote political letters, which weren't really like political manifestos, but were more just like kind of asides and observations and trying to make a few quick points. I just see him more as like he just wanted to poke modernity in the eye, you know?
Yeah.
I
can see that.
So let me just summarize that again. Rather, I think he was rejecting the contemporary conceit that we have it all figured out with our modern ways, and I think he was living through a time that proved that in a major way. And again, this he was writing these things during World War II, and then after that, you know, when these tyrannical, you know, just the mid-20th century, he lived through some of the most tyrannical, awful times of political history in the history of the world, right? Yeah. So he experienced these things firsthand. But all that to say, I'll give Marilyn the final word on all of this. So at the end of her letter, she says, one needs leadership, but it needs to exist to actualize people, i.e. a parent protecting a child as they learn how to be safe in the world, not to dominate them, and certainly not to limit them. 100% agree with that.
Oh, totally.
So yes, Tolkien was feeling anarchical, per his own definition, during World War II. I suspect it was a way of compensating for how painfully helpless he must have felt in the face of the threat to his sons and his country and the world. And certainly there was much to criticize in the political and government choices made during and after the war. But he had a strong and abiding orientation to hierarchy and made it a major element of his stories. Or at least that's how I see it. All right. Well,
yeah,
you know,
good stuff.
I agree. And I agree with everything Marilyn said there at the end. And thanks for another awesome letter, Marilyn.
Yes. Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Yep. Always great hearing from you, Marilyn.
Absolutely. All right. Greta, do you have one more thing you wanted to mention?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes, please. So there was a comment left. I don't know, on the Apple Music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and read it. So
yeah, read it, please.
So this is a review that said, not for me. They said, I felt like the host was continually rude to his wife. He made fun of her when she spoke and then got annoyed if she didn't speak. He would get annoyed if she tried asserting her voice and would make things so awkward. Strange dynamic. So it's hard to even know which episode this is referring to or if it's referring to a multitude of episodes or whatever. But
yeah.
I think this is something that comes up from time to time.
Yeah, this is not the first comment.
And we both find it very odd.
Right. So, yeah, we've received other comments in this same vein.
Yeah.
And we've just kind of read them and rolled our eyes and been like, whatever. But this one, we're like, okay, this is it. Like, I'm going to say something to this. So basically... Here's what I have to say.
All right.
I have six things to say, and I'll do it quickly.
Buckle up. All right.
So basically, this is how I feel. These kinds of comments, I find them baseless and totally useless as feedback. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. Secondly, I also find it obnoxious and presumptuous. These kind of comments assume that whoever writes these know more about my relationship with my husband than I do. I mean, really? Come on. So I just ask that you guys, like, well, I'm not going to say that, actually. I'll just say if I decide that I need help in dealing with my husband, I'll ask. I'm not above asking for help, I promise. All right.
Can I just say real quick to that? She doesn't need any help.
I don't need any help, and I'm gonna explain to you. I'm gonna explain to you why. All right. Next, I feel like, again, these kind of comments, they say more about the listener than they do about me or about John. I think this just shows that whoever writes these kinds of things, they need a thicker skin. Grow a thicker skin. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. And to be quite frank, these kind of comments are very insulting to me. I'm not a doormat. I'm not a weakling. I'm not a helpless baby rabbit. I can and do take care of myself. I can give it just as well as I take it. And again, John, I think, would back me up on that.
I feel like you do on the show.
I feel like I do too. That's why I don't really know where this is coming from.
It's odd to me because I just feel like it's kind of like part of our rapport. Like, that's, you know, on the show, saying, which I enjoy that.
Like, I know. I enjoy that too. That's why I'm saying these kind of comments, they seem like they understand, or they feel like they know more about you and me and how we relate to each other than we do.
Yeah.
So anyway, I also want to say that I took a personality test like a couple years ago, and my results put me in the same camp as Eowyn. So, I don't need any of y'all to stick up for me when it comes to how you perceive my husband treating me on the show. I can and do, like I said, take care of myself. And here's the other thing. Like, if, and again, this is a huge if there was any substance to these types of comments whatsoever, do you think I would still be doing this? Like, 200 plus episodes in, like, would I still, like, be willingly participating in this podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, give me some credit. Like, that's all I'm asking.
That's a really good point. You know, there's been times where I have, where we've come to kind of a natural stopping point, and I've asked Greta, like, you know, do you want to continue, you know, because you guys know, like, I mean, it's, you know, this is really, I'm the Tolkien geek in the relationship.
For sure.
And,
for sure.
You know, so I have asked, you know, Greta on several occasions, you know, like, do you think you want to continue with the show? And I try to be very clear, like, you know, I'm perfectly okay with you saying no, right?
Yeah.
And every time you've been like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, like, this is something that John and I get to do, just the two of us.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, as much as we love our kids, it's really good for us to have this time, just the two of us, to talk about, you know, something that we don't normally talk to our kids about, you know? And I think it's been really good for our relationship. So in summary, this is what I'm going to say. If you don't like the way my husband and I relate to one another, if it bothers you to such an extent that you think that after 18 years of marriage and 5 years of, how long have we been doing this? 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
That after 18 years of marriage and five or so years of podcasting with one and the same dude, I need you to hasten to my aid. Please don't. Just stop listening. I promise it won't hurt my feelings. Well, that's all I'm going to say about that.
Tell us how you really feel, Greta.
I know. I probably went on a little too long, but I just kind of had it. Like, I was just done.
Yeah. You know, yeah, we had somebody say something about mansplaining recently.
Yeah, that too.
I just, you know, we just get these things. That's,
okay, if somebody explains someone, like, the whole mansplaining thing, again, I think that's a term that was invented by insecure women that can't stand up for themselves.
Because, I mean, if you, like, that, I didn't even know that that was a term until you read that comment to me, and I was like, what? I had to Google it. Like, I Googled mansplaining. Like,
I tried to mansplain what mansplaining was to her, but I failed. So.
I mean, I just, you know, I don't know if this was a man or a woman who wrote this comment. I think the mansplaining one was clearly written by a woman. This one, they didn't even leave, like, a name or whatever. So I don't know if it was a man or a woman. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, like, if it's not for you, like, don't listen. Like, it's fine. It's fine. And I will say that in the beginning, like, when we first started this podcasting, I think I was a lot less comfortable doing this than you were. And it took me a little while, I think, to find my feet and, you know, just kind of get into the rhythm and whatnot. But, you know, I feel like we've been in a really good groove for a long time now when it comes to podcasting, and I look forward to getting out here and putting on my headphones and talking in the mic. And, you know, if John starts being a jerk, I'm just a jerk back. Like, it's fine. That's how we relate to one another. And if it bothers you, then just, well, you know,
it's all,
don't listen.
It's also like tongue in cheek. I mean, I don't know, like,
oh, it totally is.
I don't know how certain people can't pick up on, I think some people don't, like, may not have an ability to pick up on that very well, but, I don't know. Like, I just, like, to me, when we're ribbing each other, like, it's all fun.
It's,
like,
all fun.
Like, that's how we relate in our families, like, both of our families, the families we grew up in. We tease each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like to give each other a hard time.
We poke fun at each other.
And it's because we can do that because we do have such a deep, like, love for each other.
Right.
And we don't, like, we also understand that, like, hey, there might come a time where you need to back off a little bit and, you know, like, you know. And there's been a few times when we've recorded the podcast where we've had to kind of stop and start over and everything because maybe somebody took something the wrong way.
I'm not trying to paint a perfect picture.
Yeah.
Like, we do get into it, for sure. I mean, like I said, we've been married 18 years. We've had our fair share of fights, and John's been rude to me, and I've been rude back. And, I mean, it's just normal stuff. But if that kind of dynamic bothers you, then, you know, then that's fine. Go find something else to do with your time.
Like, get a life. All right. Awesome. That was epic, Greta.
Thanks. I hope it wasn't too much.
If
we lose some listeners, I'm sorry.
I think people, that's the thing. Like, I think people who are listening to the 205th episode of this podcast are, like, already along for the ride, and they're not this kind of person, right? And I think the people like this in the world are actually very few and far between. I think most people get by listening to our podcast that, like, we're a couple that's been married for a long time and we like to tease each other. And, like, honestly, I enjoy listening to shows where the co-hosts like to give each other a hard time.
Right.
It's fun.
I know.
Like,
it is fun.
Because
it,
you know,
it interesting.
They're part of the same podcast, and they wouldn't be doing that. They wouldn't be on the same podcast if they didn't already like each other.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's not even like just with you, even like guests that we've had on and different people that we've interviewed and whatever, like, we do the same thing with them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just kind of, it's part of our deal. And, you know, a lot of people out there like it. So I don't think we're doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
And I do want to reiterate that, you know, this was not the first comment we've gotten to this effect, which is why I felt the need to finally say something, because I was just tired of ignoring it.
Yeah. Well, awesome.
So done and done.
Done.
Yep. Dropping the mic. Bing. Walking off hot.
You guys didn't see it, but the sunglasses just came down on Greta's face.
Yep.
And then deal with it scrolled across her chest.
It
so,
did.
Yeah.
It did. It's a trick I've been working on for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use it every now and then.
All righty. So we'd love to hear from you guys. I'm sure you're all lining up to say to say negative comments after Greta's excoriation of the listener. But, you know, like, most of the feedback we get is totally positive.
It's, yeah.
We love hearing the positive feedback, and we like constructive criticism too.
We
by
really
the way.
Do.
So
that's why when
send, like, us constructive criticism,
yes.
we're not above hearing you out. And I do take some of those things on board. You know, if it's good criticism and I feel like good point, then I'll take it on board.
Mm-hmm. Like, you did used to say and a lot.
I still do.
And you still do, but I think it's gotten better.
Good.
So that's the kind of criticism that we like. But that kind of stuff, it's just completely useless.
Yeah.
You know, all it does is create tension and hard feelings. And there's just no place for it.
Well, it's just like, go find another podcast.
Exactly.
That's boring. And,
exactly.
You know, where the people don't give each other, just not
even,
each other.
It's not even worth taking the time to write stuff like that out.
All right. So we'd love to hear from you. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, through the website, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, etc. Next episode, The History of Middle-Earth, Part 4, The Third Millennium.
Woo.
Shout out to our $5 patrons, Jules.
Joey S.
Eric S.
Jonathan D.
Daniel.
David B.
Teresa C.
Ish of the Hammer.
Asia V.
Chuck F.
Chris L.
James L.
James A.
Zeke F.
Emilio P.
Brian O.
Shannon S.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all very much, and we will talk at you next time, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.